Good morning. How are you? I'm good, Aisha. Thank you. I don't think they want me to speak. I think they want to just keep singing. All right, let me get my stuff here together because you know I'm... All right, today is week two of our series that we're calling The Unfinished Story. Now, last week, I sang too hard. Maybe coughing up here. Last week, Jared gave us a lot of important information about how we should and should not use the Bible. Is anyone here for that? He went over a lot of information, right? But it was good information, and it's good because it teaches us how to apply the Bibles, not just to our lives, but how we apply to the Bible too. The Bible is one unified story of God's plan of universal redemption. But what does that mean? Like, what is the story? Well, you can't read, like, you can't tell the overall story without looking at all the individual stories within the Bible. So when I started thinking about how I'm going to take the entire Bible, which honestly, it's not just a book, it's a library. How do you take the entire Bible and you break it down, you divide it into just a few weeks of stories that tell the entire story of the Bible? So I was kind of digging around and y'all, like weeks of digging around, trying to find some kind of direction on this, of how do I divide it down? And I found this blog post and it was called Covenants, the Backbone of the Bible. Did anyone just black out just a little bit when I said the word covenant? It's not the kind of word, it's not the kind of thing that we talk about a whole lot. But if we look at the main covenants throughout the Bible, then what we find is the entire story of the Bible. So over the next few weeks, we're going to be taking the different, we're going to be looking at five main covenants of the Bible. And we're going to be looking at the role that they play in God's universal plan of salvation. That being said, we're going to be working through a lot of scriptures because we're talking about the Bible. So we're going to be looking at the Bible. So if you have your Bible or app, go ahead and pull it out. And we have enough scriptures, I didn't want to type it, so I just brought my Bible today. So... All right, so what is a covenant? Now, when you hear that word, most of the time we're going to think something legalistic. We're going to think it's a rule or it's something just boring, something that we don't really want to dive too deep into. We don't really want to talk too much about. But a biblical covenant is a partnership between God and people. In other words, it's a relationship. It's an agreed upon relationship. So the definition of a covenant is that it's a chosen relationship or a partnership in which two parties make a binding promise to each other and work together to reach a common goal. So what's an example of a kind of covenant that we might see today? Marriage. Marriage is usually the first thing that people think of when they talk about a covenant nowadays. So what is a marriage? A marriage is a covenant. It's where a man and a woman enter a formal relationship and they bind themselves to one another and they agree upon working together to reach a common goal. Whether that's they're building a life together, building a career together, building a family together, they are agreeing to move forward together. They're binding themselves together for that goal. But you know, covenant terminology is not something that we really talk about too much today. But it was something that was very common in the ancient biblical world. And it's something that's still very common in a lot of different cultures today. The social systems that we read about in the Bible, the cultures that we're diving into in the Bible, those are systems that were built on honor and trust. To go back on a promise and to not fulfill your part of a covenant, it would bring shame not only on you, but on your entire family for generations. It would mark your family, your tribe, your people. So to go back on a promise, it had little to do with you and had everything to do with your heritage, with your legacy. But this kind of collectivist thinking, it's hard for us to wrap our minds around usually, because we live in a more individualistic society. When we make a mistake, when we do something, good or bad, it only affects us, right? Or does it? That's a whole other thing we'll get into another time. But that's what we think. We tend to think that way of, if I do something, it's only going to affect me. If I make a good decision, I reap the benefits. If I make a bad decision, I'm the only one that gets punished. That's kind of the way that we think. So we don't seem to take covenants as seriously as what they are intended to mean. So biblical covenants, they carry a lot of weight. So that being said, we're going to dive right into the five main biblical covenants. So what are they? We have the Noahic. I think I said that right. Don't judge me. The Noahic covenant, the Abrahamic covenant, the Mosaic covenant, the Davidic covenant, and the New Covenant. So these are the five main covenants that we're going to be covering over the next few weeks. So we're going to get started at the very beginning. And I guess you could kind of decide who we're going to talk about by looking at those. By looking at the names of the covenants, you can kind of guess which stories we're going to cover. Maybe just a little bit. If you're familiar with the Bible at all, you can kind of guess. Yes, we're going to be talking about Jonah. Thank you, Aisha. Oh, boy. She ate her Wheaties this morning. So the thing is that we could probably go ahead and decide, like, tell each other the story of these men, of Noah and Abraham and Moses and David. We probably know their stories, but do we really understand their role in the overall biblical narrative? Because growing up, I knew their stories, but I didn't see how they work together. Because that's what we tend to do. We tend to take the Bible and we kind of break it down and we pull out a little bit here and a little bit there and we use it for different things. But when we look at it all together, it starts to become a different story. But before we can get started talking about the Noahic covenant, I want to give you a little bit of background information. But of course, I'm going to derail first. So who likes Lord of the Rings? Anyone? That is a very low percentage. You guys need to watch more movies, read more books. I love Lord of the Rings. And it's kind of fresh on my mind because last weekend, me and Matt, we had a little getaway. And we actually watched all three of the movies. And it was awesome. And I loved it. But at the beginning of the first movie, you have Galadriel the elf. And she is narrating. And you're seeing these images. And it's telling you the story of the ring. It's giving you the history of the ring and why it's important. And I'm not going to, if you guys haven't seen the movies, I won't give anything away that you probably shouldn't already know. But what she does is she introduces the conflict that will be the ongoing theme through the entire series. You know, there's lots of different stories and characters, like storylines within that one series. I really can't believe, like, I'm so disappointed that not more of you like Lord of the Rings. This is shameful. All right, our next series, Lord of the Rings. So, I'm kidding, kind of. But there's lots of different, like, divergent themes within the series. But the backbone of the overall story is Frodo's mission to destroy the ring. Everything else that happens in the story, it's there to either support that one theme or it is affected by it. If you don't understand that Frodo's mission is what the story is all about, you will miss the point. Now, you might watch all three of the movies. It's like, what, like 3 hours a movie? It's an investment. It's worth it. You could leave the experience of watching the movies or reading the book, and you could say that it's about elves and dwarves learning to become friends despite their differences. Or it's about a man redeeming his family line and claiming his place as the king. But you would be wrong. That would be taking it completely out of context and completely missing the point. The Bible, yes, I'm getting to a point. The Bible is set up kind of in a similar way. So at the very beginning of the Bible, we have the creation story. Now, the first few chapters of the Bible, we read about how God created the earth and everything in it. And we are introduced to the conflict and the theme that goes throughout the entire rest of the story. The tension and the mission is introduced in chapter 1 of the Bible. God created the earth and all the plants and animals. God created man and woman in his image, and he gave them the purpose of managing all that he had created. He entrusted the entire earth to them. He asked only that they would trust him and honor him. Humanity chose selfish ambition over humble submission. And because of that, sin was invited into the world by humans. People were separated from God because of their decisions. And humanity no longer reflected the image of God. And things got bad. That is the tension, that is the conflict, and that is the theme of the entire biblical story. That, we refer back to that story in every series that we do pretty much, right? You guys are tired of me telling you to turn to Genesis. Well, turn to Genesis. That's where we're going to be today. Because everything is explained. Everything is introduced in this beginning narrative. But instead of a beautiful elf telling you, you just get me. Thanks. I'm too tall to be an elf. All right, so we're going to look at Genesis 6, 5 through 8. It says, "The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. The Lord regretted that he had made human beings on earth, and his heart was deeply troubled. So the Lord said, I will wipe from the face of the earth the human race I have created, and with them the animals, the birds, and the creatures that move along the ground. For I regret that I have made them." But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. All right, we're going to pause for just a second. And Christy is going to come up, and she's going to tell us the story of Noah. Now, if you don't know Christy, she is over Project Kids. And I asked her if she would just share with us the story of Noah, like she would tell our kids. So, kids, pay attention. Kids, I'm looking at you. Pay attention, because she might even have a challenge for you guys, too.
Okay, so like Carrie said, the earth was filled with sin, okay? And God regretted ever making mankind. So he looked over the earth, and he saw Noah. And Noah, he loved God. He obeyed God, even though he was in the midst of this sin-filled world. Everybody making bad choices and doing wrong. So God came to Noah and he talked to him and he said, "You know, I'm warning you, there is a flood going to come. I am going to be destroying all of the creation that I have made. And I am going to save you and your family because I have found favor with you. You have obeyed me." And so God gives Noah instructions. He tells him how to build this ark. And he gives him the types of wood that he's supposed to use. He tells him the dimensions and everything. He tells him to build it 3 decks high. It's going to have a door and a window. And it ends up being, to kind of give you the idea of how big it is, it's about the length of 1.5 football fields. So it was this huge boat. And if you can imagine, he was having to build this with, you know, just hand tools and stuff. So it took him many, many years to build this ark. And so when it time came that he got this ark done, God sent two of every animal to the ark, and they got on the ark, and then Noah and his family got on the ark, and God closed the door. He sealed the door shut. So then the rain began, okay? So it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. So that's a lot of rain. The rain filled the earth. Even the highest mountains were covered with water. Okay, so during this time, Noah and his family, they were safe. Every bit of creation was wiped away. But Noah and his family and these animals were all safe and taken care of on this ark. God did not forget Noah during this time, 40 days, 40 nights. And then there was a time period of all that water, if you can imagine how long it took for that water to go away. In fact, it says in the Bible that it was about 150 days before they even began to see the tops of the mountains again. And so the ark hit a mountain or landed on a mountain. It was Mount Ararat. And the waters continued to recede, and they kept going away. So at some point, Noah sent out a dove, okay? So he sent this dove out of the window, and this dove comes back. You know, it couldn't find a place to stay or anything. There was no land. So again, after a time period, Noah sends out another dove. This time, the dove comes back, and it has a twig in its mouth. So Noah knows that there is some land. There are trees with some leaves, okay? So he waits for another time period, sends another dove out, and this dove did not return. So Noah knew that the earth was beginning to dry up. The bird found a place to live. So not long after that, God opened the door of the ark, and the animals were released. Noah and his family released the animals, and then they got off the boat. If you total up all the time period, it's kind of interesting. From the time it began raining until the earth was dry and they were able to get off of the ark, it was about a year. Can you imagine being on an ark with all those animals for a year? I can't. But anyway, so after they left the boat, Noah and his family, they offered a sacrifice to God. They worshiped him because he saved them from this flood that destroyed all of creation. And then God, he made a promise to Noah. He promised him to never flood the earth and destroy creation like that again in a flood. And he was going to remember that covenant, not only with the... And he put a rainbow in the sky. And so he said, this is my sign of my covenant with you. Every time I see the rainbow, I'm going to remember the covenant I made with you. And every time mankind sees a rainbow, then we will remember that covenant as well. Okay? So, kids, here's a question for you. Okay? So at the very beginning of our lesson here in just a little bit, I want you to have an answer for me. Okay? So be listening for the answer to this question. Adults, you can be thinking about it too if you want. But the question I have for you is, who is the story of Noah really about? So think about that.
Thank you. All right, so that's a very, quick version of the story of Noah. Now, if you want to read the story of Noah, I would highly recommend that. It's very interesting. But I'm going to be honest with you guys for a moment. This is a story I have always struggled with. Do you guys ever have those Bible stories that you just keep coming back to and you're just like, it doesn't make sense. Like, I can't wrap my mind around what God was doing here. And this has been that story for me. I've always struggled with reconciling the God that we read about in the Old Testament with the God that Jesus tells us about in the New Testament because of this story. The story of the flood is difficult. You know, it's presented in kids' Bibles. Have you ever read it in the kids' Bible? It's presented in the kids' Bible as a story of animals, and all the animals get along, and a beautiful rainbow, and clouds, and butterflies, and doves, and it sounds more like a Disneyland Animal Kingdom-themed cruise ship than a vessel that was designed to save a remnant of the world from global destruction. It's presented as something cute and beautiful and friendly and a good bedtime story, when really it's rated R. How could a God of grace and mercy and love pour out judgment like this on all creation and save only one family? Like, sit on that question for a minute. Because that question has been haunting me for weeks. You know, it's probably a good thing. It's probably important that I was who just ended up getting to speak this message, because it caused me to face that question and really dig into it. It forced me to face the question head on and come to a better understanding of God's actions. I have wrestled with this question for weeks, and this is what I've landed on. Are you ready? This is not an answer to that question. This is where I have landed on it, just to be clear. If you take this story out of the context of the entire biblical narrative, then God will come across as a merciless judge. You have to place the story in its context. You have to place the story of the flood within the story of God's grace. Yes, God sent a flood that literally destroyed everything and everyone on the earth except for those in the ark. But why? We're going to look back at Genesis 6, verse 5 again. It says, "The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. The Lord regretted that he had made human beings on earth, and his heart was deeply troubled." You know, the story of the flood is one of God taking merciful action to restrain humans' ever-increasing slide into evil. It's hard to imagine the flood being an act of mercy. But let's think about it. It was brutal. It was brutal. But the wickedness of humanity had escalated to a point to where there was no hope of reconciliation with God. It was no longer attainable. The tension that was introduced to us in the first few chapters, the conflict that we hear of in the creation narrative, it has to lead to reconciliation with God. It has to lead to redemption. But the human heart had grown evil all the time. The hope of reconciliation was gone. The meaning of the flood, God's intervention to stop humanity's headlong slide into evil. So God had created the earth to be a place where humanity could flourish, but instead they had turned it into a theater of violence and disaster. Now, God took no pleasure in the flood. It says that his heart was broken. It says his heart was deeply troubled, deeply troubled. Like, there's things that bother you, there's things that keep you awake at night, but there are things that consume your heart. And this consumed God's heart. The only hope left on earth, God took and he placed it on an ark and he protected it. Without understanding the role that this story plays in the overall biblical story, it's impossible to understand why the flood was necessary. But the tension introduced to us in the creation narrative tells us that the story of the Bible all points toward the relationship between God and humanity and it being restored. God did not introduce sin, pain, evil. It was invited in by humanity. The flood was God's way of restoring the goodness of his creation. Some people have come to call the flood the decreation of the world. The world, it sunk back into the chaotic waters that God had cleared away on the first page of the Bible. You know, if you read the very first verse of the Bible, it says that the Spirit was hovering over the waters. There was chaotic waters, and that's all that was. But as you read on, it says that, that God, let me see here. Let's just say it how it is. I'm going to find it. In chapter 1, verse 6, it says, "And God said, let there be a vault between the waters to separate water from water. So God made the vault and separated the water under the vault from the waters above it. And it was so." The flood was surrendering the earth back to the waters. It was a decreation. And it could have been that God just started fresh, that he completely eradicated all of his creation, but he chose to save a remnant. Because when he created the heavens and the earth, the plants, the animals, and humans, what did he call it? He called it good. Because he created it with goodness in it. But all the goodness had come out of humanity, except for he found favor with Noah. He knew that the goodness existed in his creation still, and he was not ready to give up on it just yet. So he chose Noah and his family to start again. Noah was seen by God to be righteous and blameless, chosen to enter into a covenant with him. It says in chapter 6, verse 17 and 18, "I'm going to bring floodwaters on earth to destroy all life under the heavens. Every creature that has breath of life in it, everything on the earth will perish. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark, and you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you." So like Christy said, Noah was given specific instructions, very specific instructions, down to what kind of wood to use, how to put it together, how big everything should be, how to fill it. And in verse 22, it says, Noah did everything just as God commanded him. So we already kind of heard this part, so I'm going to skip ahead until after the waters have subsided. So we're going to look at Genesis chapter 9, if you want to go and flip there. So Noah and his sons, they step off the ark, and God tells them in verse 1, "Then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, 'Be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. The fear and the dread of you will fall on all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the sky and on every creature that moves along the ground. And on all the fish in the sea, they are given into your hands. Everything that lives and moves about will be food for you. Just as I gave you the green plants, I now give you everything. But you must not eat meat that has its lifeblood still in it. For your lifeblood, I will surely demand an accounting. I will demand an accounting from every animal and from each human being too. I will demand an accounting for the life of another human being. Whoever sheds human blood by humans shall their blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made mankind. As for you, be fruitful and increase in number, multiply on the earth and increase upon it." Does that sound familiar to anyone? It should, because we've talked about this a few times, just a few times. It reminds us of what we've read before in chapter 1 of Genesis. Right after God created Adam and Eve, he told them something. He gave them a mandate. In verse 27, it says, "God created mankind in his own image, in the image of God who created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, 'Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the sky, and over every living creature that moves on the ground.' Then God said, 'I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the sky and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food.' And it was so." So it sounds a little familiar, right? But there's some differences because things happened. So God told Adam and Eve, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And he gave them all of the plants for their food, for their nourishment. He put them over all of the animals, all over the land. They were over everything. They were entrusted with his creation in order to cultivate and co-create with him. They were entrusted. But things happened. Sin was invited in. So there's a few differences now. Now, God tells Noah that you're given animals to eat, not just plants. You have animals to eat now. But there's anonymity between man and animals. There's no coexisting in peace any longer. And there's stipulations. There will be an accounting for blood spilled, animal and human. Why? Because God will not tolerate useless killing and murder. Side note, God probably didn't include this little thing for Adam and Eve because he created them with the purpose of cultivating and creating. Why would he have to include, don't destroy my creation? That wasn't part of their original creation, their original purpose. So why did God repeat this mandate to Noah? Now, and this is a mandate, this is not the covenant. Why did he repeat this to Noah? He is inviting Noah to partner with him as co-ruler of creation 2.0. Noah is like the new Adam. Now, they have been given the same mandate to start again. Cultivate my goodness in the world. Make it beautiful. Make it mean something. Don't give in. Don't give in and invite sin in. This is an opportunity. And then he takes it a step further. And he invites Noah into the covenant. So in verse 8 through 17 of chapter 9, he says, then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, I now establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that was with you, the birds, the livestock, and all the wild animals, all those that came out of the ark with you, every living creature on earth, I establish my covenant with you. Never again will all life be destroyed by the waters of a flood. Never again will there be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant I am making between me and you and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come, all generations to come. I have set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all living creatures of every kind of on the earth. So God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant I have established between me and all life on the earth. You know what I find so interesting about this covenant? It's kind of unique. We're going to learn about some other covenants in the next few weeks, but this one's different. It's different because God is not asking for anything in return. Nothing. He's not saying, I will do this if you do this. I won't destroy the earth if you never sinned again. No, he is saying, I promise to be faithful, even though I know that you won't be. And if it's not you, Noah, it's going to be one of your sons. And if it's not one of them, it's going to be someone else. Just like in Eden, we see that instead of cultivating God's goodness, Noah began cultivating for his own purposes. And that spiraled into a situation that created from his family the very nation that would be the number one enemy of Israel. Now, I'm not going to go into the details of that, but keep on reading in chapter 9, and you'll see what I mean. Noah began cultivating, but for his purpose instead of God's. So how does Noah's story further God's plan of redemption? Because it seems kind of hopeless, doesn't it? It seems like every time I speak, I present you guys with a situation that seems absolutely hopeless. But there's always hope, because it's not the full story. See, the story of Noah actually has very little to do with Noah. It's about God. In fact, every story in the Bible, every verse in the Bible, every relationship in the Bible, it's not about what you're reading about, and it's not who you're reading about. They're all about God, because you know what? The Bible's about God. The story's about him. It's about his redeeming promise. The covenant that God made with Noah proves God's faithfulness and goodness. He could have destroyed the whole earth. He could have destroyed all of creation. But he chose to save a remnant. He entrusted his magnificent creation once again to mankind, knowing that they would likely fail him. He renewed the promise that he had made to Adam and Eve, to Noah and his sons. See, when we place the Noahic covenant within the larger story of God's plan of universal redemption, we can see that God is not a punishing tyrant. You know, it's hard to imagine what could bring God to the point of global destruction. But we have to think, for over 1,600 years, God watched his beautiful creation fall to sin. It took over 1,600 years for God to intervene and offer mankind a second chance. The covenant that he made with Noah, it applies to us too. You know, that covenant, it said, for all generations. It's been thousands of years again, but we're still part of those generations. The covenant applies to us too. And God's not asking for anything. He's not demanding anything in return. He's saying, I will redeem you. I promise not to destroy you, no matter how far off you get. We have the opportunity to partner with God in cultivating his goodness on earth. And he doesn't ask that we're perfect. And he doesn't expect you to not make mistakes. Actually, on the other hand, he kind of expects you to make mistakes. It's kind of what we do. Noah wasn't perfect. But what made him worth saving was that he was available. So we're going to do one more song. And I want you guys to just stand up. And I want you to just worship with us, because we need to learn to just be available. Not to be perfect, not to try to be perfect, but to just be willing.